Hi, this is a Life of Learning podcast. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Life of Learning podcast. Hi, Devon. How are you?
Man, I'm doing really well.
Good. Thank you very much for joining the podcast. I've been looking forward to speaking to you all week, so it's good to have you on the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. I was pretty excited once you messaged me on Instagram. I was pumped because I think I've been a solo podcaster for a while now. I just teach chess. I just talk about chess on the internet. So I'm really excited to talk about, just spread the good news.
Yeah. No, I'll tell you what, let's start off with that because that's how I found you. I look for a lot of, back in the day, when I say back in the day, probably about 5 or 6 years ago, there was probably only one chess podcast, and that one was called Perpetual Chess, which is sort of like which is like the gold standard now, isn't it? I think.
Right, it is. Yeah.
Yeah. So then recently I started to look for some more podcasts, and I saw your come up in my feed, and I've probably binged maybe about 75% of the episodes, and I thought, So what I like about them, they're varying in size, but the content is really good. So I'll tell you what, let's start off with that. Let's start off with your background first, then we'll get onto your podcast. So how did you get into chess?
Okay, so I got into chess. I was a 9-year-old. What started was seeing my big brother go to libraries, going to tournaments, and then he started teaching chess. And he's like my older brother. He's my oldest. And I admired him when I was younger. And I used to practice chess. We used to have like a glass chessboard. And I used to practice on the glass chessboard, even though you're never supposed to be playing on the glass chessboard. You're never supposed to be playing on it at all. So I used to practice on it. I broke a pawn. And then my brother found out that I was interested in playing chess, which is, I know, you're not supposed to break the pieces. I get it. But anyway, I started going to the library with my big bro. And I met some other cool people. I learned how the pawn moves. I learned how the bishop, queen move. I still was having trouble with the knight at the beginning. I remember that. I didn't learn every single piece. I think it was majority the pawn. We played the pawn game, the mini game. And then when I got home, my brother got me this game on the PlayStation 2. And it was this game called Chess Master. And so that's when I learned the rest of what I needed to know. That's when I learned the bulk, how all the pieces move, how the two rooks move, queen rook. I learned how to checkmate with those pieces. I learned what is tactics, what is strategy, what are forks, pins, skewers. And yeah, I had to do a tournament the next week, which is crazy. And I did fairly well in the tournament. I got like 12th place out of over 100 kids. So, you know, that was basically my background. And then after that, it just... after that it just soared. Like, for example, I would play chess, play at tournaments, and at the same time my brother was a chess coach, so I would go with him and coach other students that needed help. I was not only learning, I was teaching
as well. So your brother was an actual chess coach?
Yeah, we would go to different schools, teach at like different elementary schools, high schools, etc. And yeah, he was an actual coach.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool. Okay, so you've been playing chess since you were 9 years old and the passion hasn't gone away.
Yeah, no. It's been over a decade. There's always something new about chess, and that's why I like it. It's not only about chess too. It's like life lessons that I learned from it and how like I incorporate it with my own life and things of that nature.
Yeah. Okay, I'll tell you, we'll talk about the benefits later because I believe there are more benefits than people realize. You know, it's not just the sort of like a board game. It's just so many other things that you can learn. So we'll talk about that later. Yeah, so I got interested, and your podcast is called Chess Knowledge with H1. Now, I've got to ask you, how did you come up with the word H1? What was the...
So I came up with the word... I came up with the name H1 because... So I started this business a long time ago, and I started streaming on Twitch like 5 years ago when I was 18. I actually started fairly early, and back then I was H1N1.
Oh, okay.
But at the time, like, I was a kid, teenager, stupid. I don't know why I thought of that name, and I actually had the swine flu H1N1 when I was in sixth grade. So I was kids used to call me that in middle school. They used to call me H1N1. That was like a name. I put it on my tag, my gamer tag when I'm playing PlayStation 3 or whatever. playing Rocket League. And so that's what I used to use. But then I started the podcast and I was thinking, I cannot come out as H1N1 during a pandemic. too insensitive. I grew up and I was like, you know what? Let's turn it into H1. I actually like it a lot more than people. I was talking with my brothers. I was like, man, what should I do? Should I just change the whole name together? Should I just go by my own name? He was like, nah, H1 is fine. H1 is cool. It flows with the name. And I was like, okay, Chestnut Oaks with H1.
Yeah, no, I love it. H1, it's just got a nice ring to it. It's simple. Yeah. H1, and if you're a chess person, you can go, okay, yeah, H1. Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, wow. I wish it was like something simple as I like the rook on H1. It's the best rook. I push up the pawn all the time or whatever, but it's that's the full story. It's out there now.
Yeah. No, that's good. And again, before we got onto the podcast, we actually said, I actually explained to you how I got into podcasting. So what made you want to go from Twitch to actually podcasting?
Well, Twitch wasn't, I didn't have the necessary equipment to become the Twitch streamer that I wanted to be, but mm-hmm. I needed something as simple that I could do with my phone. And I was just looking up ways because I did the whole teaching chess thing when I was a teenager, and actually out of high school, I was teaching chess just like my brother, go to different mm-hmm. schools around the Kansas City area. Mm-hmm. I think I taught at like over 10 schools a week. It was crazy. And then I directed some tournaments, things of that nature. I already did all that, but I wanted to do something different online. And I was seeing all these online people that was coming up on YouTube, like Chess Bros. I don't know if you know who they are, like Eric Hansen, Hikaru Nakamura.
Yeah.
Gotham Chess is really
Gotham
big
Chess,
right now.
Yeah.
But he wasn't back then. Like I didn't even know who he was back then, but like the OGs, John Bartholomew. And I was thinking like, man, I need to do something that I can do since I'm competing with these big dogs and I'm not getting no traction at all. And I want to like figure out a way to monetize this because I want to like the game while monetizing it. Sure. And then I was thinking, can I really do a podcast on chess? And then my inspiration actually came from Perpetual Chess because I was thinking, okay, he actually has guests on his podcast. Yeah. And I was like, okay, that's a little bit harder because I don't think anybody's going to want to be on my first episode mm-hmm. of my brand new podcast. I was like, can I do this alone? And that's where it started. My first episode, I just talked about how, like, everything that I went through with you and just in major detail about everything. And it was a hit because during that time that I put out my first 5 episodes, the Netflix series with Beth Harmon, that just came out all of a sudden. And then it rose up the podcast where I still have about 100, 200 people listening, like pretty much every day. And we just reached 100K plays.
Yeah, I know. I listened to one of your podcasts. Yeah. And that's fantastic. Yeah. Well, I mean, did you ever envisage that you'd actually do that?
No, I'd never envisioned that, especially since I don't have a guest. I'm just a solo podcast. I just talk about my experiences, chess, what's going on in the news. And I mean, I started in my car. Like I said it multiple times in the podcast too, people who listened to the first episode. I was started out in my car with just my phone and I was talking into my phone, had like, it was such bad mic quality because you would hear the S's and the it was so bad.
The P's,
the P's too. Yeah. And but people listened to it because I feel like I had more knowledge out there that made people like, okay, I can get over that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the timing for you was obviously magic with the pandemic and the Queen's Gambit, because those two things, let's face it, without those two, I mean, chess is going through a renaissance at the moment. It's really popular, isn't it?
Right. And then plus two, like during that time, I didn't know that a solo podcast was going to work because in the beginning, it didn't seem like I had enough content because most chess content is like, you have to see a visual board to learn. Like how are you going to learn in a podcast? But I figured out some ways. I started writing out some notes and I just couldn't stop writing. I still have all the outlines that I had from the beginning. Like I wrote them out. I have like a whole doc list. It's crazy. Just all the stuff that I could think about. And then nowadays I'm just doing pretty much everything. So it definitely started my entrepreneur career in chess online.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, as I said, you know, with the Queen's Gambit and the pandemic, it was the right time. Because let's face it, if you had started maybe, I don't know, a year earlier, you might not have had that traction, maybe. Who knows?
Yeah, who knows? But during that time, I'm glad that those few things happened, because that just made me see, okay, there's somewhat of a need with this, and I can do this very easily on my phone. And so,
I think I would like to say to everyone, you know, the audience as well, and if you wanted to start a podcast, it is not as hard as you think. I think the bit that's probably nerve wracking is, you know, starting and then pressing that publish button. For me, that was the thing that was really nerve wracking. Once I pressed it, I thought, wow, okay. And then you start getting into a groove. I don't know, how did you feel? I mean, is that the same sort of experience or not?
Yeah, it was the exact same experience. Like I said before, all you need is a phone to start a podcast. And then plus two, back then it was probably easier than nowadays, because I used a platform Anchor.
Same here. No.
Yeah. Anchor is just, it was really good back then. And because they distribute all of your, distribute your show everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know if they do that nowadays, since I think it's bought by Spotify.
Yeah. Yeah. Spotify bought it. I mean, you still have to, well, for me, you still have to go on to some of the platforms and register your RSS feed and stuff like that.
But it was so much easier in the beginning. It was so much easier. But it's still easy today. Like, people still listen to podcasts.
I mean, yeah. So really, I mean, like I said, you can just do it on your phone. Anchor is fantastic, especially for a beginner. You know, you don't need to have editing. Well, I mean, it depends how much editing you want to do. I don't know how much editing you do, but
I didn't do that much editing, because I did. So if you listen to my podcast, I do it in segments.
Yeah.
And so I do like a 5 minute segment, five minutes. And then if I said something wrong, or if I stutter, I try to be like a good speaker when I'm talking in podcasts and things of that nature. I'll just scrap the whole thing. It was harder back then, because I would have like 20 minute segments. So if I messed up like 10 minutes in, I'm like, I really just scrapped the whole thing instead of editing. I didn't know how to edit on the podcast. Because I was doing everything from the app.
Okay. So what about now? Do you edit now or not?
No, because it's a lot simpler. I do shorter form content. I realize that we're going into an area, a era with short attention span.
Yeah.
And so the 10-minute episodes actually do quite well every single day. I feel like a lot of people would rather the 10-minute ones instead of like the long hour ones for some reason. I got a much younger audience too, somewhat. So like 18 to 24, things like that.
Yeah, got it. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, so let's get to the chess then. Right, okay.
There we go.
So obviously, chess is going through a boom, and it still is. I mean, a lot of people are playing online and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So you've been playing chess a lot, you've coached a lot. I mean, you're quite experienced. So tell me, if you can just explain to the listeners, you know, sort of like the aim of the game, and, you know, in your own words.
Okay, if I was explaining my own words, the aim of the game is basically to destroy your opponent's mind, just in a brittle way possible. Because in chess, you're not supposed to be kind. You're the leader of the army, and you're basically sacrificing army members to win the game. So you're supposed to take it seriously, like in real life. But to put it simply, in chess, how I narrow it down is basically, if you see two AIs competing against each other, it's usually a draw, right? Mm-hmm. But to humans, it's not a draw, because it's humans playing. It's not just two AIs, two chess engines playing. So your main goal straight from the start is to try to overwhelm your opponent to make a mistake, to make a blunder. And the tougher it is, to overwhelm that opponent. So with grandmasters, it's like a really hard thing to do. You have to play specific opening theory, variations. Yeah. You definitely have to have activity. You got to do all of the above to defeat a grandmaster. With the beginner, you probably don't have to do that much. Just develop your pieces, capture the pieces that he gives you, things of that nature. So it's all about overwhelming your opponent to make it a mistake. It's all about putting pressure, putting aggression on your opponent. After you get that aggression, after your opponent messes up, then at that moment, you're not supposed to forget the opportunity, right? Don't miss the opportunity to harp on it to get a winning position. That's when tactics come in. Tactics is basically like short form goals where you have a concrete sequence of moves where you get into a winning position, and then you got to convert that winning position into a win. And that's the last step. And so those are pretty much what I talk about on my podcast all the time. And people who listen to me, they know it.
Because I mean, I tried to explain it to someone and I said it was like a battle, it's like a war. And you know, I think they probably thought I was just, you know, overhyping it. But it's a war of the mind, it's a war of, I don't know, it's a war of everything. So tactics.
If you're just playing casually, I get it. You're just having fun. That's recreation. And sometimes I kind of wish I was at that moment, because those is probably the best fun I ever had, you know, just learning how to play chess, get into this level, things of that nature. But as you face off against tougher opponents, it's like a whole different ball game. It's crazy.
Okay, so let's go back to our minds, go back to when we were sort of like beginners, because I don't want to sort of like encourage the sort of like people that's not played chess. And I'm sure everyone knows what chess is. They know there's black pieces and white pieces. So so just explain the sort of like the pieces and, you know, the board as well, just for people.
Okay. So it's a 64 square board, and you have six different pieces that you're going to have to learn. It's the pawn, the bishop, the knight, the rooks, the king, and the queen. You're going to have to learn those six. It's only six pieces that you have to learn. There's nothing more, nothing less. So after you learn those six pieces and how they move, and sometimes the pieces actually move like other pieces. For example, the queen moves like a rook and bishop, right? Because a rook moves up, down, left, right, and the bishop moves diagonal, and the queen is like a combination of a bishop and rook. The game could be a lot simpler if you like have a good coach, things of that nature. And then you're going to have to learn how to checkmate the king. And once you learn those few things, you can play the full game. Once you learn what checkmate is and how the pieces move, and then everything else is kind of extra. Once you learn that, you can play with friends and family, have a lot of fun. I used to go to gatherings. When I was younger, I used to go to libraries all the time. Most people play online nowadays, but I still remember going to chess clubs, libraries, and people would just be playing chess in the library. I used to play homeless people. Everybody was playing chess. They had a chess clock. The library would provide a chess clock and a chess board for free. Wow. And so, that was the time when I was playing chess as a beginner. I lost a lot of games. I've explained multiple times, my first year playing chess, I lost pretty much every single game against my brother, who was who was my coach. He played me. I really didn't have a specific coach because I never had like a weekly schedule. I just trained every day, but he would play me and I'll test out my skills, and then I would just lose every single time until I won a game. But if you're just playing casually, then just have fun. Just have fun with it. Learn, study, do puzzles. Those are the three major things that you need to keep on doing.
And it's so much easier now to play chess because back in the day, because I was born around when there was no internet. So, you know, in order to play games, I was playing games with my brother or anyone else that, you know, would come around the house and stuff like that. So it was really rare. But now when you've got chess.com and Lee Chess and all the other websites, it's so much easier for a beginner, especially with YouTube now, to learn the basics and go and play online and just learn.
Yeah, you can learn the basics on YouTube. Like I have a YouTube channel called Chess Hours Stage One, right? And I have playlists for beginners. I have a playlist for like if you're trying to learn all tactics, strategy, things of that nature. And you can learn just so easily. I do short form content. So for each piece that you learn, it's like a 1 minute clip or a 30 second clip that you have to watch. And then you learned that piece already in just a few seconds. And it doesn't take that long to learn all the pieces. And then all you have to do afterwards, after you learn all the rules and the pieces, what check and checkmate is just play online. Because like you said, once you play on chess.com or leechess.org, it pretty much shows you what moves you can do already. It's not like you're playing in on a real chessboard where either you or your opponent has to know how the pieces move. It's like, no, chess.com guides you into what piece can move here, what piece can move there.
Yeah, and it tells you the illegal moves as well, which is a real big help.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you can just play. Just get online. Yeah. There's apps. When I was in high school, when I was in a chess club, we had this app called Play Chess with Friends. And that's the app that we used to play chess on. It was like correspondence type of games.
Yeah, sure. So one thing I will say, because I have seen some of your videos. Yeah, so if you do want to learn, I'll put Devon's... YouTube channel and Instagram and everything on the in the show notes for the podcast. Get all the moves, all the basic tactics and everything like that, and how to play chess. So yeah, no, it's a really, really good stuff. And I love the way you do it as well. It's really, I don't know, high energy, and you've got a big chessboard. No, it is really, really, it's different from the other podcast because they all use computers, so I was going to ask about that, because I can see, I know the viewers, the listeners are not going to be able to see the chessboard behind you at the moment, but yeah, but you've got a sort of like a, is it a plastic chessboard?
Yeah, where
you,
it's like a,
the pieces, yeah.
So when I was teaching chess, this is all that we used. I would have a bag with me with the chessboard like this, and I have a tripod, and that's how I teach the kids with this. This is what I'm used to. I'm not used to all the computer stuff. This is all that I had. And then chess, like I used to bring briefcases to schools with chess, chess boards. My wife, we used to just go to schools and just teach chess on this thing. And once I realized that, I did one video on this and I was like, oh snap, this is actually working out. And I think it worked out because nobody else is using this right now. And because it's so old school, and everybody forgot that this was even a thing.
It's fantastic. And that's what I like about it, because, you know, at the end of the day, you've got to try and distinguish yourself or you know, separate yourself from everyone else. And, you know, that definitely does it. Okay,
because
cool.
I remember watching YouTube, like older YouTube videos a decade ago on this chessboard, like Yasser Sarawan. These are this was the thing back then. But it's funny how like the old always come back around, just like how we have the flip phone coming back around again.
For sure. And I think that's really what separates you, you know, from the other sort of like content creators. Yeah. So no, it's good. So so we've spoken about the basic moves and everything like that. So I want to talk about the benefits, because I know you said that you go and you teach, and so you used to coach and stuff like that. What do you think the benefits that you've got, and what do you see the benefits that, you know, that children and adults can get from it? Because I can see there's just loads. I mean, I've got a list of some, but let's see if they match with what you're going to say.
So it definitely made me a critical thinker on some parts of my life. Like, for example, it made me a critical thinker on like budgeting and things I'm pretty sure that's why, like, I was somewhat into like finding out about assets and liabilities, reading books like Robert Kiyosaki at like a very young age, just because of chess. But other than that, it kept me focused in high school too, on like the main goals of what I'm trying to do, because I didn't go to like a very good school. And so like when I got back home, I just played chess. I didn't really hang out with people, things of that nature, with a bad crowd. And and so I went to chess schools, chess clubs, and I just stayed focused on chess primarily. And a few more things is, it helped out with a social life, there's a really big chess community. If you go to a chess, actual chess club in your high school, I'm still friends with them till this day. We're all friends on Facebook. I mean, it's a lot of things that come with learning how to play chess and actually absorbing chess, just like if you was trying to learn a new language, because if you're trying to learn a new language, you would have to actually go to the country where you're actually forced to use the language, and you're forced to like write the language and things of that nature. It's the exact same principle of chess. You know, if you're trying to become the best for the next tournament, or if you're trying to become a grandmaster, you're going to have to do those type of things. And so I met some really cool people that I'm connected with now. I just met up with the Kansas City Chess Club just recently, yesterday. He's a really cool guy I used to work for. But other than that, those are all the things that I can think of. But for other people, I've taught many children with different type of disabilities and grownups too. And it definitely helped them out with like staying focused on a specific thing and sitting down, things of that nature. ADHD. I've taught all people. I taught a kindergarten how to play chess. That was like the hardest thing ever, like from scratch, teaching a kindergartner that doesn't want to sit down. But he learned. It was a whole group of them. Yeah, me and my wife really worked hard.
Okay. So your wife actually plays chess as well then, yeah?
Yeah, she learned how to play chess maybe 3 years afterwards. And
okay.
she learned how to play chess because she wanted to work with me, which
sure.
we worked together with this company, cool. the Kansas City Chess Club. And yeah, okay. we went to different schools, things of that nature.
Cool. Okay, mm-hmm. cool. I mean, the other benefits that I've got is, and it's only sort of like dawned on me probably in the last maybe couple of years, but recently, is you have to be so creative. It really gets those creative juices going because, you know, especially when you look at the tactics and you look at it and you think, right, how am I going to navigate through this position to get to, you know, to solve the tactics or the puzzle or anything like that? And you really have to, it really tests you. And like, again, you're really focused on looking at the position and then you play the first move. And if you can try and think of the second move after that, and it I don't know, it's more creative than people make out. I don't know what you think on that.
No, it really is. I'm thinking you're going to have some hard trouble convincing people of that because of the era that we're in right now, you know, yeah. chess engines, people complain about like, all Grandmaster games end in a draw because they all know the openings, things of that nature, but it's still creative, like finding novelties. There's still millions of moves that we haven't played yet in the game of chess that master. I mean, I go over a lot of openings on my YouTube channel, and there are still master games that haven't even surface to those type of variations. And yes. so yeah, it's still pretty creative. I'm really happy when I learn specific patterns and when I see specific patterns in real games. Mm-hmm. Chess is all about patterns. I'm pretty sure I can contribute chess to learning how to solve the Rubik's Cube, because I learned how to solve the Rubik's Cube a long time ago. It's basically the same thing. Rubik's Cube, you have algorithms that you have to do. And then once you figure out you got to get this side this color, and then you got to get these corners this color, and then you got to do this specific type of pattern. It's pretty much all that you have to do.
Well, you know, I'm big into Rubik's cubes. I've had a lot of I've had a lot of guests come on for
I was gonna say, I never got into it where I can finish a Rubik's cube in like 10 seconds, but if you gave me a good minute and a half back then, I could do a Rubik's cube.
I mean, the best time I've done is under 30 seconds, so
30 seconds. That's really good. Look, but, so you know some stuff about
But
I don't ever know that part.
But like you said, the Rubik's Cube and the chess, you can see there's similarities in there in the way you're learning it. And even, you know, you may not think it, but even when you're solving a Rubik's Cube, there's a lot of creativity there. It's, you know, the finger tricks that you use, you know, some of the algorithms and stuff like that, where you can use your left hand, right hand. There's a lot of creativity there. And that's what I like about chess. Now you said that the grandmasters. Now, I just want to explain, can you just explain that concept to people in terms
Grandmaster.
Of, and the rating system, because that's a big thing in chess.
A Grandmaster is basically like the final boss in a video game.
Yeah.
And the thing about chess is it doesn't even stop at Grandmaster. There's actually another section that is forming just now that's like the elite grandmasters. Yeah. That's people like Magnus Carlsen or Carl Nakamura. That's the top 10. That's above 2,800. It's crazy, the rating system. But there's a few titles even before Grandmaster, like International Master, Candidates Master, National Master, Chess Master. Yeah. And pretty much all those other titles that I just named would be smoked by a grandmaster. And that's how much of a differentiating rating that is. It's like grandmasters can beat somebody that is like an expert at chess every day of the week, like 10 games, 10-0. There's no chance that there is some chance if the grandmaster messes up, of course, you're gonna be beat the majority of the time. That's what a grandmaster is in chess.
Yeah, because they call them super GMs. I think that's what they're called, isn't it?
Super GMs, right? And they're super GMs. And the weird part is the super GMs can smash the regular GMs like it's nothing. And it's like, what just happened here?
Yeah.
It's really different from back then when there was Bobby Fischer, Garry Kasparov, just powerhouses like that. It's a way different rating system, especially since chess engines came into the world and things of that nature.
Yeah, yeah. And I just want to explain the ELO system. So if so for instance, if I was to play you, say for you as an international master, and I wasn't titled, so I didn't have a title. Now, if I beat you, my ranking would go up by quite a lot because I've beaten a strong player. But if you lost to me, then your rating points would drop by a lot because in theory you should be beating me pretty handily. Would that be a way of explaining it?
Exactly, that would be a way of explaining it. Correct. Yeah, that's correct, because if I was international master, and this is why those grandmasters and international masters take a real game seriously over the board, especially if it's rated, because if they lose a game or even draw a game, let's say a 2400 rated person, international master, lost a game or drew a game against like a 1500 person, even if they drew the game, even if nobody won the game, they're losing a lot of points. And so that's why it's really hard to become a grandmaster. Even if the grandmaster drew a game against somebody that was considerably lower than them, they would lose a big amount of points. That's why they take the game seriously. And it's really hard to get at those ratings, because if an international master wanted to become a grandmaster, they would have to get a certain amount of GM norms just to become one. And GM norms is basically playing fantastic games against other grandmasters. It's not only about the rating points. And yeah, it's really hard to be the best. That's all I can say.
Yeah, yeah. And to be honest, even, you know, I mean, I'm actually 1400 on chess.com, which... the rating is totally different when you're actually playing over the board stuff.
Right.
But even just to build up at the lower end of, you know, the rating is still hard, because, you know, if you do lose to someone that's lower, your points go down sometimes by 50, 100 points. It's brutal, isn't it?
Yeah, online chess is even more brutal, since it's not exactly accurate as in over the board chess. But yeah, online chess it sucks, because it is brutal enough. A facet, and I wouldn't even take those games seriously, because you don't know if the person is cheating sometimes. Like, they send you a message like, oh, that person just cheated, we're gonna give you your points back. It's like, oh, come on. And that's why I love playing over the boards. There's nothing like playing a classical tournament where you have 2 hours and your opponent has 2 hours, and you're just focusing on the board, trying to answer questions, thinking in your head how you can just be aggressive, trying to put all the pressure on your opponent, thinking about strategic elements that you learned from long ago. It's nothing else that's more beautiful about that. It's cool. Yeah. And then you just hear chess pieces all around you just being slammed. You hear the chess clock. It's a quiet room. You can hear a mouse pee.
I've only ever played 2 over the board competitions in my life, and that, so you've had more experience. But I mean, actually being in the room with the, you know, the pieces there that you can pick up and hold and move, nothing beats that. But as I said, it's good now that people can get the entry level into online chess, and then if they want to take it to the next step, they can.
Because I'm acting like I'm an old man, but like when I started playing chess, I mean, chess.com was in its beginning stages.
Yeah.
And then chess.com didn't have all the grandmasters. They didn't have all the tough people like Hikaru Nakamura back then. Yeah. So to face all the tough people, there is this old website. I forgot what it was called. I think it's the chess club or the internet chess club, mm-hmm. where you would actually have to pay just to face off against tougher opponents, like title player opponents. So I didn't even have a chance of facing off against the people that I need to face off against. Usually how you improve is you face off against tougher opponents and your rating rise like automatically, because you have to think a lot more against those opponents, and you're basically breaking your barrier when you're constantly facing off against opponents that can demolish you.
I think that's one thing that because I know a nephew of mine wanted to start to learn to play chess, and I gave him some advice and stuff like that. And I think there's two things I think we need to sort of like highlight. If you want to get good, you're going to have to lose a lot.
Yeah.
That's one thing. Go on. Let's hear your comment on that.
So I actually have a story. When I was teaching chess, I had the kids face off against each other for the first time ever. And there was one kid that was brand new and he was really young. He was like, I forgot if he was like a first grader or kidnergartner, but you know, I'm not going to choose
age, what
one.
Age, what, yeah, what age is that? What age would that be?
Like 6 or 5, okay. Got it. 5 years old. And he lost for the first time in chess and he bawled his eyes out. Like he cried so hard. And then it was like the first time he realized, oh snap, I can lose in a game. And that's kind of the reality that you're going to have to put yourself in. It humbles you a lot. Because if you think that you're just going to get into the game winning against everybody, that is not what's going to happen. Bobby Fischer lost games when he was first starting out playing chess. So you're not going to just get into the game expecting to be magnificent in a prodigy. And prodigies still lose games. So you're just going to have to get with it and just be and make sure when you're losing those games. And I highlight this a lot. I have an episode specifically on chess mistakes. Make sure you learn from those mistakes because that's where you're going to find out your best improvements, right? That's where you're going to find out your best improvements to not do that mistake in the next game. So,
In fact, it's saying that sometimes, because I've got probably about, I don't know, maybe about 12 games on the go on chess.com. And to be honest, the ones that I lose, those are the ones that I don't want to lose. I always want to win. But those ones I want to lose, I want to get the you know, you can analyze the game and stuff like that. Those are the ones that I'm more interested in looking at to see, you know, where I could have improved, which move I could have done to maybe turn the tide on the game and stuff like that. So you learn so much from your mistakes and losing games.
Yeah, I would say that a lot of chess players, if I would say a percentage, maybe 75% chess players have a bad habit of just looking at their wins and not looking at their losses at all, just ignoring it as, oh, I just blundered my queen. Oh, I just gave away that. Oh, I just blundered that fork. It's like, no, why did you blunder that fork? Was you just not concentrating? Did something distract you? You got to figure out why. Because you don't want to do that again. And if you're just really having problems blundering on your queen, then you need to do something else, like play loser's chess, if you know that, like anti-chess, to not blunder pieces. You got to do something to figure it out, because you should not be blundering pieces like that, especially if you're trying to get competitive. And sorry, I just went off on a rant.
No. I think it's a life lesson, though. I really do, because you know, like you said, that young person that you know, bawled his eyes out when they lost. I don't know if it's the same in the States, whether it's probably the same in the States as the same in the UK, where they have these participation trophies where no one loses. Yeah. I don't know if they have that. Yeah. Well, now obviously in chess, there's three outcomes: a draw, a win, or a loss. There is participation. I don't know, result, is there?
The tournaments that I went to, first, second, third. That was the only medals. And then there was, like, it's certain tournaments, there was like, okay, everybody else get a medal. Then like the first, second, third player gets to get the trophies. But you always recognize the person that's first.
But I mean,
when you play chess, reality.
That's right. But you lose a game in chess, you know. You lose, you know, you can lose or win. You know, there's no sort of like, okay, you can draw. But yeah, so I think that's what's good about chess, because I do like the participation, because it does give, you know, people the opportunity to play a game or enter a tournament or a competition, and they get something, because you want to encourage people. There's no, you know, you want to encourage people,
right,
but there is the cold heart of day is you could lose, you know. And I think losing is a good thing.
I've been through a lot of emotional roller coasters, you know, just blundering, like being at a tournament, blundering, made it one against somebody you beat like already 50 times in different tournaments, and like it's actually became more of an emotional thing going to tournaments when I had a team, because every time I lose, I would feel like, dang, I just let the whole team down when I should be winning every single game since I'm the best player on the team. I definitely do understand that, though.
Right, so I'm gonna do some quick fire questions. You ready?
Okay, let's go.
Right, I mean, I'm assume you're familiar with the word GOAT. Who do you think is the GOAT of chess?
The GOAT is, I would have to say, Magnus Carlsen.
Okay, cool. For me, I would say Magnus as well, but we'll talk about that as well after. Yeah, right. Next one, favorite chess piece?
Pawn.
Cool. Favorite player?
Isn't that the same thing as the... No, Magnus Carlsen.
Okay, no, you're saying that the GOAT is Magnus Carlsen. You're saying your favorite player is Magnus Carlsen as well.
Yeah.
Okay, cool, exactly. That's fine. Yeah, right. favorite, blitz, rapid, or standard?
Like the most fun?
What would be your favorite?
Or what, my favorite?
Yeah.
Bullet. Or bullet. Wait a minute, did you say bullet?
No, I didn't. I said blitz, rapid, or stand. Okay.
Oh,
okay.
Blitz. I'll go blitz then.
Blitz, yeah. It's blitz. Yeah. Let's have a look, because I mean, that's one thing we haven't explained, the format and the time control. So let's just go into that then. In terms
blitz,
of
blitz is 3 to 5 minutes for each side. Mm-hmm. Okay. Rapid is 5 to 10 minutes on each side. Mm-hmm. And then standard is like anything over 10 minutes. Now, bullet is anything under 3 minutes.
Like, yeah.
So bullet is like 1 minute, 1 minute on each side. You play a full game. Obviously, you can't do it on like a real chessboard. It's purely online. But yeah, my whole teenager years, I remember the sleepless nights playing bullet.
And I'll tell you what, it is so addictive.
Yeah,
it because is. You want to go one game and you want to go for the next, before you know it, 2 hours of your life is.
and bullet is the only time control where you will lose like 15 games in a row or like 10 games in a row and you still want to play.
Yeah.
Like, because the games go by so fast and you just want to get that last one. You want to end off the day with the last win.
It's a good one as well, because you kind of have a short memory as well, because you've played so many games, you forget the loss.
If it's rapid, I'm just mad at the end if I lose the game. I'm just like, man, what did I do wrong? How did this even happen? I thought I was calculating. Well, bullet is like, it's mainly about intuition. I'm having fun.
Yeah,
this is entertaining. Let me play a few more tournaments.
Yeah, I think that's the for me, that's what I like about it. It is sort of like less pressure, and you can enjoy it. Mm. Okay, and the final one is black or white.
White.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, you have to.
They
move first. You get the control. Like, I'll explain it. It's not just like I hate the black pieces. I'll explain it. Like once you get into it.
Let's tell you what. Let's go back to what did we say? The goat. Conversation. Right, so I've been lucky, very very lucky, to see both Magnus Carlsen and Kasparov play live. Kasparov played in the World Championship in 93 in London in the Savoy Hotel. I don't know if you're familiar with that. It's a famous hotel, the Savoy Hotel. And he played against Nigel Short. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but
I know who Nigel Short is.
So they played in the World Championship, and it was kind of a breakaway competition in the World Championship. And it was in the Savoy Hotel, and we went into the auditorium. They had a big screen with the moves, I can't remember what it was screen. It was a big screen anyway, but they also had headsets, so you could hear the commentators, and this was on like FM radio. So the commentators will be talking about the moves whilst you've got a headset. They would give you that in the auditorium, and you'd hear the moves, what the best move was and stuff like that. And you'd watch the championship, the championship game. And I was really lucky. I saw Kasparov win one game, and then we went second time, and I saw Nigel Short win another game. So for people that don't know chess, draws are very common in chess in general, let's face it. Not just championship chess, but just chess in general. At that level.
Yeah, that's really exciting that you've seen the Garry Kasparov game. Well, that was probably back in 1993. That was in his prime. That was in his peak.
And so that's how much I was into chess then. And even then, there was no online chess then. So, I was playing, scraps of games with my brother when we could play. So I never played and went to a chess club or anything like that. That family then. So I've never really got that chance to do that. And then they had the Grand Chess Tour. I'm sure you're familiar with that one. Yeah, they had that in London at the Olympia. And I saw Carlsen, Nakamura, Wesley So, all the Nepo. I saw all those guys. They were all on the stage, six of them. They had all the screens and everything like that. It was just like chess heaven. So I don't know whether you've been to anything like that yourself, where you've gone into.
I, Shoot, I wish I would have been to places like that. I usually just see all that stuff online. I never actually went to the physical place. Yeah, I can't wait to go to like the St. Louis Chess Club because I'm like 4 hours away from there.
Oh man, you gotta do
I do want to do a whole vacation with the family, go there.
Yeah.
That seems like a fun trip to go on.
Yeah.
But yeah, I haven't did anything like that. I can't wait in the future to do that.
Yeah. So, the reason why I'm just trying to say, the reason why I brought that up, the reason why I'm saying Magnus is the GOAT, because I agree with you. Mm-hmm. Kasparov was fantastic. You know, he was amazing, you know. But because there are so many strong players now that Carlsen's got to contend with, plus with all the chess engines and everything like that, for him to be world chess champion for just under 10 years, let's call it 10, yeah?
Yeah.
It's pretty remarkable. Let's call it a decade. It's pretty remarkable. And that's the reason why I would say he's the GOAT, because you've got, there's more younger and younger grandmasters picking it up now. You know, 12 years ago, 12, back in the day, I mean, I don't know who the youngest grandmaster was back in the day, but they were probably 15, 14, 15. Now they're at 12.
Yeah, and there's just a lot more things of why I would say he's the GOAT. For example, he's in his play, he's very consistent, even though he does have his like tournaments where he's just tilting really hard. He's fairly consistent this whole decade. He played against Garry Kasparov as a 13-year-old and drew against him. I mean, and then plus two, what you just said, he's playing against all these players, and this is like the first world champion where he's just out there online, he's streaming, he's playing chess over here, he's playing chess over there, he's not afraid to play whoever. Yeah. And he has a good result against the majority of the chess players that's on the top 100.
Yeah.
And so that's why I would say he's pretty much the GOAT, even though I'm really sad that he's not going to be facing in the World Chess Championship, because everybody knows he's still the best. Everybody knows he's still the best.
But I tell you what, let's go on to that, because I listened to your podcast about that, and for those who don't know, Magnus Carlsen is probably, I don't know, he's the poster boy for chess at the moment. I mean, you know, he's number one. He's taken probably the game to the sort of like the next level in terms of popularity, just his personality, just the way he plays as well. Very creative player, and basically he's been the world chess champion for the last, let's call it 10 years. And recently he decided not to defend his title. Correct?
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Right. So, and you know, there's many theories out there, and I kind of understand, because I think the rigors of competition chess at that level must be very taxing.
No, it definitely is. Like I said before, if grandmasters, even though that you might think that the career is not that taxing, but they literally practice 8 hours a day, just like a normal job. They look at variations. They look at new games that are going on. They study so much. And then plus two, imagine studying for a whole year to face off against one player. And so you're going to have to go through that one player's whole database of what they know, what repertoires that they've been playing recently. And then you got to plan, okay, what are they going to do against you? And you got to be prepared for that. And it's just like a battle. And they have a whole team. Like, they have seconds. And a second is just a coach that, you know, they're better than, but at the same time, they're the best coach for them to like go through variations and things of that nature. And so it's very taxing. And I think that he wanted something more interesting too. And all the best chess players get bored of chess. Bobby Fischer did it. Why not Magnus Carlsen?
But saying that, I think it was because of his opponent, because he's playing Nepo again, isn't he?
And yeah,
He had already played him. So can you imagine him going through the same? Because he's not going to, the guy at Nepo is not going to change his openings unless he did change his openings in the last.
And he crushed John Nepo.
Yeah.
Just to put that out there. He crushed him.
Yeah. I mean,
because John Nepo started playing like a, and I know this is kind of disrespectful, but he started playing like a 2300 because he was blundering so badly in the second half. I'm like, wow, why? He just defeated all of the other grandmasters in the Canada's tournament. And then I don't know what happens. I think it's like the Magnus Carlsen juju. Every person that faces off against Magnus Carlsen is just, they just fold.
Yeah.
I can't explain it.
No. And I think the thought of playing him again, I think that was probably, I mean, there's probably many decisions, but that's what I would think would be one of his decisions was, I've played him already. I'm going to have to go through that same grind again for the same player.
Yeah. And me saying that about Jan Neville, he would crush me
yeah.
10 out of 0. Just to put that out there, he'll crush me 10 out of 0. But you have to play at a certain caliber if you're trying to be the best.
Yeah,
so I'm saying.
Yeah. And the thing is, I remember watching it when it was coming out and you saw Cotham, Chess and all these other guys, you know, looking at the game and analysing the game. And, you know, even they were shocked about some of the blunders that he made.
Yeah, the blunders is insane. I was in, like, I drive trucks and I was in my... like during the stops, I was in my truck. I was like, did he play that move? And I was listening too. I was like, what is he doing? Yeah, this is because he played some amazing games in a candidates tournament, like facing off against all the contenders. And I was, I think that a lot of people was disappointed. I mean, even he said it in an interview. He was like, I'm sorry for how I'm playing, like to my countrymen and things of that nature. He was disappointed. And so it was very interesting. I think Magnus Carlsen, for this last candidates tournament, I was wishing that El Reza Faruja would win so that Magnus Carlsen could just play one more person that he wanted to play. But Jan Neville just took off.
And to be honest, I must admit, I'm not really that interested in the fun. I mean, it'd be nice. What's the other guy's name? It's Ding.
Ding Laren. He's a really good player. He plays my favorite opening, which is the Catalan, and he's a really good player. It's just like you said. I don't know if it's going to be as interesting since we all know that Magnus Carlsen's the best.
Exactly. I mean, I don't know how they're going to sell that to the public. To be fair, I don't know. I mean,
It's going to happen, but.
Yeah. So for me, it's whatever.
I'm still going to be going for Ding Laren just because of how Jan Neville played against Magnus Carlsen.
Yeah, and it will shake things up as well, wouldn't it? Let's face it. Yeah. It would shake things up. Don't get me wrong. I'm still going to watch it. You know, I'm still going to watch
Gotham Chess.
Yeah, Chess. Yeah, because I just love his analysis. Mm-hmm. In fact, I was about to say, do you think you'd be doing any analysis on the, or is that something that you're probably going to leave to those guys or not?
Yeah, we'll see. They be coming out pretty quickly. I don't have the time to come out that quickly, but we'll see about that time. I'm going to have to see what day the World Chess Championship is. Is it happening this year?
Is it happening at the end of this year? I think it's the end of this year. I don't know. I would have to figure it out,
but I could do some analysis. It's going to be like the day afterwards, though. It's not going to be as quickly. Man, Gotham Chess, he's on it. And I really appreciate that. He's feeding the chess crowd.
I mean, let's face it. I mean, I don't know. He's got to be probably the number one, isn't he?
He's number one. He just hit about time this podcast come out. I mean, about time we did this podcast, he's at like 2 million.
Which is insane.
2,100,000.
Yeah, which is insane.
He's popularizing chess a lot. I mean, because of people like him, Hikaru Nakamura, I think Hikaru Nakamura pretty much started the train. Well, all the OG chess players started the train. It's just they popularized it on Twitch.
Sure.
I mean, they stream for like 8 hours a day.
Best of their job. I mean, but I see what I do like is some of the winning ones as well.
The Botes sisters.
Who else? And there's the other one, Anna. Anna is pretty good.
Anna's pretty good. And then Nemo, I don't know. I forgot.
Yeah.
All I know is the Botes sisters. They're pretty awesome.
They must have almost a million, surely. I don't know. They're probably,
They're
up there as top women anyway, for sure.
Yeah. Chess Bros are still going at it. And then Eric Rosen. Those top chess players, they're doing pretty good online.
You say John Bartholomew? Yeah, as well. Yeah.
Yeah, John Bartholomew. Yeah. That's the first person that that's one of the top people that I actually started watching beforehand. Yeah. He was one of the OGs. He was one of the first people before all these Hikaru Nakamura, Gotham Chess, things like that.
Gotham Chess,
he has such good analysis on the games that he used to play. I learned so much. And I just thank him for that.
I tell you what, the reason why I like Gotham Chess, I think his name is Levy, isn't it? Yeah. He's, the way he breaks down the games, it's almost like a story. I don't know how he does it. He makes the games sort of like come out, and it's, you know, it's also not a fairy tale, but you know, it's very dramatic. And some of the things he says, I just love his analysis. Because
that's how chess is supposed to be. I mean, have you ever watched the St. Louis Chess Club commentary in tournaments?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Their commentary is top tier commentary. Yeah. I love Yasser Seirawan, Maurice Ashley, and
Jennifer Shahadi.
Yeah, Jennifer Shahadi. Yeah, yeah, those was like the best three. Like,
yeah,
the last dream decade, team. they took over chess. Yeah, that was the dream team. Like Yasser Seirawan, he could say anything, and I'll be listening. I'll be focused in. Yeah. Maurice Ashley with the hard calculation on the computer. It's really awesome. They have some top tier commentary.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what I liked it, because when they had the Grand Chess Tour over here, I managed to
they made it seem like a sport too. They had the music in the background. It was like intense. They had some intense music. It was a really good setup. They made it professional. They was interviewing people afterwards. That's how it's supposed to be.
Yeah, the production level was it was second to none. It was just like a normal broadcasting operation. Everything was, and you can imagine. I mean, because when I went to the Grand Chess Tour, Maurice Ashley was there as well. So what happened was that, you know, say for instance, when Magnus Carlsen finished his game, everyone would dive out of the auditorium to go and look at the interview, you know, with Maurice Ashley. So it was really behind, you know, we were behind the scenes seeing what we normally see.
That would be awesome to see.
It was, I'll tell you what, it was fantastic. Really, really, really was. Yeah. And then you could actually go to another room where, if you didn't want to be in the auditorium, there was one guy, I forgot his name now, it'll come to me anyway, but they would...
There's Alejandro too.
Yeah, Alejandro. But in the auditorium, they would have, you know, grandmasters or IMs analysing the game, and people in the audience will say, well, what about F5? What would... So it was more interactive outside the audience. Yeah, so
that's how you're supposed to do it. That's
how you're supposed to do it. But it was a really... You know, if you went to one, you'd get your money's worth, because you could actually sit and watch the game, or you could go out and look at, you know, listen to GMs talk and have fun and stuff like that. So it was a really, really good experience. If you was a chess nerd, you'd be in your element.
Yeah, it's really heaven in chess. And then plus two, I would say that they have like the best commentary. I know Chess24 is getting up there. They're trying. And then chess.com is getting up there too. Danny Ranch, Fabio Caruana. Yeah. But it's going to take a lot. I still like that commentary, even though chess.com actually, they really had a good, they had a good tournament commentary recently, actually.
I
love the speed chess championships. Those are awesome. And in the recent big tournament they had too. Danny Ranch is hilarious. And what's the guy that's near him all the time? Robert Hess,
they're
pretty hilarious.
But I'll tell you what, I mean, you know, let's make it broader now. Chess commentary now around the world, I mean, you know, these guys don't even have to be in a studio. They can just be in their own home, you know, as long as the game is being televised and the moves are being put onto a screen. You know, it's amazing now, nearly every major chess competition now has got commentary and analysis, live commentary and analysis. The feed, you know, the feed is lasting about 6 hours if you want to sit and watch chess, but it's there if you want to geek out on it, which is amazing.
I'm loving it, because I mean, I don't think people are going to understand. A decade ago, it wasn't like this. It was like nothing like this on the internet at all. And so it was just like books, go to libraries, go to chess clubs. And then I used to get these magazines. That's all the chess news that I hear. But nowadays, it's like everywhere. It's everywhere. You can go on Twitch. You can go on TikTok. I mean, I'm on TikTok too, Chess Knowledge with H1. I do live streams there. And yeah, it's everywhere.
No, I like it. I tell you what, I mean, I'm a lot older than you, so I even back then when I first started playing chess, you know, people were actually playing correspondence chess where you know, and I know you did a podcast on it, and you know, I'm thinking, and I was gonna do that because I was so desperate to sort of like play, and I never got around to doing it, but when you go from there to now, where I can just go on to chess.com and I could play someone in Bolivia and another person in Australia, It blows my mind.
Did you do the letter thing? You did the letter correspondence chess?
Oh, no. I wanted to, but just I wish I'd had, because then I could say I did it. Because, yeah, you know,
that's how you really learn chess, though, if you think about it. That's because if you have to wait 7 days to get the move from your opponent and you're just analyzing a chess game, that is the way to go. If you're trying to become an expert,
but but now it just blows my mind that, you know, you can play you know, all these games, multiple games, 20 or multiple games with people in different countries. It's fantastic.
And then just to say a tip too, what's going on nowadays is I think correspondence chess is coming back a little, because elite grandmasters, sometimes you hear a commentary, they're like, oh snap, no masters play this. It was like, no, there's been a couple games, there's been a couple games in this variation in correspondence chess. It's like, yeah, because they're seeing that correspondence chess, it's more accurate moves than regular master games. Over the board, it's live, you know what I mean? Correspondence chess, they actually have time to think about the move, like days to think about the best move in this variation. That's how hard it is to become an elite grandmaster. You gotta look at correspondence games.
One thing I forgot to mention was, I mean, my favorite chess player, who, I mean, I just follow her because I do like watching some of the women's games as well, is Jennifer Wu. She just recently won the US Championship. And what I like about it was when you hear her interviews are, I'll study, you know, and, you know, when I finish studying, you know, because she's at university, she's college, university, and then, you know, so she does, she obviously she's an elite player, but she doesn't seem to practice like an elite player. She'll say, right, once I finish my studies, you know, I'll take 2 weeks off and prepare for the championships. So she's, but then she's playing against players that are studying almost, you know, 24/7. And I just love her attitude. And I just love her style of play as well. And she's won the US Championship, twice now, you know, being almost, you know, a college student, which I just find amazing. I think she's just got a great personality. You know, she's really good for the game. And that's the person that I just love watching.
It's going to become a lot. It's going to be some upcomers these next maybe 10 years, I'll call it. It's going to be some upcomers, women chess championships. There was this one, I forgot this. There's this one woman that won the women's chess championship. She was my favorite. Because her game is awesome.
Young or old?
She's older.
From the US one.
Not the US okay. one. Dang, I forgot her name.
I mean, I like the other one as well. Is it Ho Hee Fan? Is it?
The one. Was really good because she was playing like the top 10 grandmasters. Yeah. And she was really good. She got some wins off on them, and it's just disappointing because she's not playing chess as she used to anymore, but she was the best to me. Her games was pretty awesome.
I mean, they would say that she was probably the second to, what's the woman's name now, Judith Polder. I think she's second to her. Is it Ho Hee Fan? I did like watching her when she was playing, because I just loved her style. She said, right, no, I'm not playing in the women's competitions. I'd rather play in the men's competitions.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and there's a whole big debate about whether the women should have titles and stuff like that. There's a whole debate.
I don't want to get into that. Yeah, we don't have to get into that.
But, you know, as long as it encourages, you know, women to play, then, you know, that's all good with me. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The other two questions that we just went over, who's the best player and...
Oh, yeah.
And why I would rather white pieces than the black pieces?
Let's go for that one,
Okay, why would I rather the white? Because the white pieces, you get the control. Like, you know, grandmasters, when they're facing against players, they go for the one with the white pieces, and then with the black pieces, they go for a draw. Because with the white pieces, you have more control over the game. So that's why every person should just say the white piece. It's a lot easier. All you have to do is learn one good opening and you're good, and all the defenses that black is going to do. With black, it's a lot harder because you have to learn all different openings against all of white's replies. So you have to know how to go against e4, d4, c4, b4. Like, Even B4, I've seen some people play B4 online chess, and I'm like, what am I supposed to, I didn't even study this. Like, why are you playing B4? So, and even G4, I got to learn how to go against the Grob, which I finally got some idea how to go against it. But yeah, yeah. It's a lot more difficult to beat a second player than the first player, who all you have to do is go into your favorite opening, which I'm a D4 player.
I'm an E4 player. Yeah.
E4? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, E4 is exciting. Yeah. I just know when I get older, I can't be an E4 player because of all the theory.
Sure. So but theory. I think it's different levels, though, isn't it? I mean, if you're a beginner and stuff like that, you know.
Yeah, go for E4 if you're a beginner. D4, E4. Like, if you're, I'm for rolling. If you go for anything else, you're going to stunt your growth.
Yeah.
And stop going for Scholar's Mate, whoever's listening. That plays chess. Stop doing Scholar's Mate. You're not gonna get better doing that.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, in fact, my son tried to do that on me because I think he went online and saw that, and I'm like, okay, all right then. I've been around the block. I've seen this one many times.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Okay, now okay. Resources.
Resources. Yes. Okay. Yes.
What do you want to know about resources?
One thing I would say is go to your website. And go to your resources, because I think your resources are really good. They're very unique and different. So that's what I would say. But yeah, Craig Aaron.
Okay, so I have a YouTube channel called Chess Knowledge with H1. Yeah. I'm almost hitting, hopefully about time this comes out. I don't know when you put out your episodes, but hopefully I'm going to hit 25,000 on YouTube. That's going to be 25,000 subscribers on YouTube.
Wow.
On TikTok. I do live streams every day on TikTok. I have a Discord that you can join, over 500 mm-hmm. people in the Discord, and then over 100K people on TikTok. It's really exciting over there. Chess is, I think it's starting to boom over again. There.
On TikTok, you mean?
Yeah, on TikTok. I want it to boom like Twitch, but we'll see in the future, because mm-hmm. Twitch is like the main spot where people play games. And then I am on Instagram, I am on Facebook, but you're going to get probably more value on YouTube because I have over 750 videos on YouTube for free that you can just look at, watch, learn different patterns. Mm-hmm. It's short form content. You can watch one every day. You're going to learn something. And so, yeah, that's where I'm primarily at. And then plus two, I do have a podcast. I'm on Spotify, Google mm-hmm. Podcasts. I'm on Apple Podcasts, and mm-hmm. it's called Chess Knowledge with H1. I try to do it every single week. I do take little breaks in between the year, of course, you know, just to get everything else set up. Like, for example, I got like a course on Patreon that I'm setting up, I do the podcast. I think I have like over 70 episodes now. It's crazy how far that podcast went, but yeah, that's been exciting too. But that's all my content. That's all my resources. It's all free. You can just Google Chess Knowledge with H1, it will all pop up.
and I would recommend going on there. It's a different you teach it differently to everyone else, and that's what I like about it. So yeah, it's good. And for me, it's good to see a man of color doing it as well, because there's not many of us out there that are into that, well, into chess, especially on the content creation.
That is true. Yeah, I just passed that.
It's true, though. Got it. And yeah, just one few tips, you know, just for, you know, the person that's listening to this podcast that's thought about chess, you know, what would you say to them?
A few tips. I would say just do the three major things and you're going to improve. Do puzzles, play chess, and study. If you're not doing one, that one is going to suffer. Like, if you just study and do puzzles, then your experience is going to, it's going to decrease. Yeah. You're going to be mad that you're not winning games because you're not playing games. You don't got the experience. So if you're doing those three things, you're fine. Most people ask me, what am I supposed to study? I'll say, go on my YouTube channel. Then you'll figure it out. Start at like the tactics playlist. I literally go over every single tactic that you need to know. I go over interference, deflection, all the advanced ones, and intermediate and beginner ones. Like, I go over discover attacks, double checks, et cetera. And once you learn those patterns, you're going to get better. And then for all the people that has a hard time like getting over a specific rating because they plateaued at like 500 rating, or they can't get over 1,000 no matter how they tried, learning how to play chess isn't linear. It's actually like you plateau and then just one day you just spike up all of a sudden. It's never, I wish that it was linear. It would make stuff a lot easier if I just learned this and then I'll just do better in the next game, but it's not like that. It spikes up, it compounds just like if you was investing or whatever. Yeah, how chess is.
Yeah, but I think that's how learning is all the time. Because like I said to you before the podcast, you know, there's so many different sports and different hobbies that I've got. And that is the same. You reach a plateau and then all of a sudden you go to another level and you see an improvement. Then you hit another plateau. And that's the same with chess. You know, when I learned the Rubik's Cube, you know, even with running, because I run as well, and you get to a level where it's the same thing. So there's no difference with
chess. You just got to figure out that one thing to break that barrier. I promise you, it's like that one thing. And then that one day you're going to be happy about like you figuring out some things because everything's just going to connect. Yeah. it's so weird how it happens, but it does. It happens all the time.
Cool. Okay, Devon, I tell you what, thanks for really coming onto the podcast. It sounds like chess has really, I don't know, it's changed your life really, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, every time I take a break away from it, like when I was becoming a CDL driver, every time I take a break away from it, I usually always come back to it because it makes me happier. So I can't go through life without teaching chess. That's just how it is.
Yeah. Yeah, but you've gone all in. I mean, with all this content that you're creating, it's a lot, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a lot. I made a promise to myself 6 months ago is that I was going to put out at least 1,000 videos and see where that goes. So I'm pretty sure I'm not going to stop now. Okay. Before that, I only had like 10 subscribers, and now it's like 25, almost 25,000 on YouTube. It's crazy. Wow.
Nah, that's good. Nah, I'll tell you what, I'm really pleased with you. I mean, I just love your energy on your videos and your podcast and stuff like that. And yeah, I'm hoping you encourage more people to go and play chess. So
yeah, it's going to be fun.
Yeah. We'll thanks for coming onto the podcast. Really, really enjoyed talking to you. And good luck with all your future endeavors.
Yeah, you too, Reggie.
Thank you. Cheers.